You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
Judge Gorsuch has not had occasion to rule directly on a case involving Roe. However, his writings do raise questions.
For a judge who likes every outcome he reaches is probably a pretty bad judge, stretching for policy results he prefers rather than those the law compels.
William Paul Young is an extremely dangerous Bible twister who's not bringing to you what Scripture says. He's bringing to you a theology crafted in his own heart.
Northern Michiganders love Issues, etc.
It was summertime in Northern Michigan.
What do you picture when you think about life under Islam, where Islam is not only the majority, if the only, legal religion? It's also your politics. It's your family lifestyle. It is just about everything. It is the air you breathe. And Sharia law is, well, you don't know any other law than Sharia law. Do you picture people just more exotically dressed, speaking a different language? They look different, but they're just basically Westerners living under a, well, it's a little backward. It's a little anachronistic, but it can't be that bad. Well, think again. We're going to be talking about the Islamic worldview and its morality versus a Christian worldview here in the first hour of Issues Etc. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Tuesday afternoon, the 21st of March. Noni Darwish will join us. She's author of the book, Why I Chose Biblical Values Over Islamic Values. Wholly Different is the title of the book. Then Mark Hemingway will be alongside from the Weekly Standard. We're going to talk about a liberal columnist that connects the religious decline in America with Trump's election. I think I've heard that before, but not from a liberal columnist. Pastor Tom Baker will be our guest. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson today, the Lord's Supper, in Luke's Gospel, Luke chapter 22. Joining us to talk about the Islamic worldview versus the Christian worldview, Noni Darwish. She was born and raised in Gaza and Cairo. She is director of Former Muslims United, senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy, and author of several books, including her latest, Wholly Different, Why I Chose Biblical Values Over Islamic Values. Noni, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you, Todd. My pleasure.
You say that living under biblical values saved your life. What do you mean by that?
Well, you see, the whole world wants to come to live in America. And there's a reason behind it. It's not just because people want a job, want to have a higher standard of living. For me in particular, the day I landed in America, I discovered that, oh my God, I am enjoying life under the values of this country, the legal system, the way people treat each other. And I didn't understand that it was biblical values. That came gradually. And I said, what is so unique about America? Why does the world want to come and live here? And I discovered that the biggest gift America gives the world is life under the values of the Bible. And I can see them everywhere. It's going into a supermarket and an employee tells you, good morning, how can I help you? If you go to the Middle East, people are of course, there's good and bad in everybody. But people don't go out of their way to greet you and be nice unless they really want something from you. It is very biblical that people don't want anything from you but still want to give you a smile as they see you. That is very biblical. very biblical. And just living under truth, under values of truth, because when I lived in the Middle East, lying is an obligation, is often an obligation. And people who speak the truth are often put in jail. So it's a completely opposite value system. And that's why I wrote my book, Holy Different, because I wanted to tell this country, America, don't lose your values, because they are, that's why I am living in freedom and dignity as a woman, human rights, all of these gifts that America gives the world. That's why the world want to come and live here. They are really biblical. And a lot of people, leftists in America, who criticize the Bible and make fun of people who live by biblical values, they really don't understand that their own freedom, their Bill of Rights, is all biblical. And I'm very grateful for my life in America. It saved my life. I really lived in trauma in the Middle East when I was born. I was born in Cairo. I grew up in the Gaza Strip. My father headed the Egyptian military intelligence in Gaza. His job was to destroy Israel. So I really lived in a war zone, because my country, my culture, my religion was obsessed with killing Jews. So in America, the values are God, family, country. These are the priorities of Americans, the natural priorities. But when I lived in the Muslim world, the values were Allah, jihad, pride, and shame. That's what you live by. And when you live by jihad, everything is sacrificed for jihad. And what does jihad mean? In the Muslim books, jihad means a war with non-Muslims to establish the religion of Islam and to conquer the world to Islam. The goals of Islam is not normal goals. They are not religious goals, really. Islamic goals are not religious goals, and that's what the West doesn't understand. They invite Islam to be at equal footage in the West, not knowing that Islam came 600 years after Christ, not to validate and confirm the Bible, but to discredit it. Islam came as a counter-revolution to the Bible. It's a rebellion against biblical values, rebellion against the Ten Commandments. I did not live under the Ten Commandments when I lived in the Middle East, because Islam violated all the Ten Commandments. It gave an exception to killing. It gave an exception. Do you know that there are laws in Islam that says the Muslim will not be prosecuted for killing an apostate? So you're living in a country where the citizens are told, if you kill somebody who leaves Islam, then you should not be prosecuted. And this is the ideology that the West is welcoming at equal footage with the Bible, totally contradicting the Bible. It's like bringing a match and gasoline together.
You just said it there, and you say it near the end of your book, Noni, that one of the things misunderstood in the West is that Islam isn't just another religion. It is, in fact, as you just said, a counter-revolution, a rebellion against the Bible. Go into a little more depth on that, if you would.
That is something that even I didn't know when I was a Muslim. Because when I was a Muslim, I really believed it. I believed the propaganda. I came to America, and the first thing I was told, don't assimilate in America. And I asked why, because we are here to conquer America. So it became very clear to me that Islam, the goal of Islam is to conquer biblical values and eliminate them completely. And then when I looked at history, the whole Middle East was Christian, because Christianity and Judaism came out of the Middle East. The whole Middle East was Christian when Muhammad came to, when he started his mission. Egypt was a Christian nation. The Byzantine Empire was the head of their headquarters were in Turkey. Today, it's called Turkey. So the Arabian Peninsula was the last area of the Middle East to accept the Bible. It resisted. It was a very rugged area of the Middle East that was very harsh to live under. And when biblical values started penetrating Arabia, it came to a point where either Arabia was going to accept the Ten Commandments, accept the Bible, or not. Muhammad, he understood that there is going to be a huge problem for his family personally, for Arabian culture, because Arabian culture had to make a huge change, because Arabia does not follow biblical values. So also Mecca was where Muhammad was born in Mecca. Mecca was the city that had the Kaaba, which is the place where all of Arabia used to come and do pilgrimage in El Kaaba. It was the religious headquarters of Arabs. And suddenly, if Arabia accepted Christ, accepted the Bible, then Mecca was going to end. The power of Mecca was going to end. And the pilgrims were going to start going to Jerusalem. That was going to be the new headquarters for the religion, the new religion. Muhammad had to act very quickly. Either he was going to abide by a foreign religion and be just a municipality of the Byzantine Empire, or he was going to create a new monotheistic religion and challenge the power of Jerusalem. He chose challenging the power of Jerusalem. That's what he chose to do. And that was the counter-revolution started by Muhammad to end the power of Judaism and Christianity and the Bible and make the center of the religions of the Middle East in Mecca and not Jerusalem. And what happened is Muslims, after Muhammad died, conquered Jerusalem and built a mosque on top of the temple, the Jewish temple, the Solomon ruins of the temple. He built the mosque to eliminate any memory of the children of Abraham. And he actually commanded Muslims on his deathbed to go kill them wherever you find them. Kill Jews wherever you find them. And it's the only guarantee to go to heaven. So the God of Islam is totally different from the God of the Bible. The God of Islam wants us to die for him. Jesus died for us. So everything that was of value in close to the hearts of Jews and Christians, Islam came to discredit and to tear down.
Noni Darwish is our guest. She's author of Wholly Different, Why I Chose Biblical Values Over Islamic Values. We're talking about the Islamic worldview versus a Christian worldview. When we come back, what is it like living under Islam?
Mm-hmm. Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit MemoriaPressAcademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Solid, serious, substantive. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery says, "A secular world desperately needs thinking, rational Christians." This month, read more from Dr. Montgomery and other experts on science and theology by subscribing to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's The Lutheran Witness. Visit cph.org/trylutheranwitness for a special offer of $6.99 for six issues. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective. cph.org/trylutheranwitness.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Tuesday, March the 21st, we're talking with Noni Darwish, a former Muslim, author of Wholly Different, Why I Chose Biblical Values Over Islamic Values, about the Islamic worldview versus a Christian worldview. Noni, I wonder how you would respond to a really common misconception here in the West, and that is that living under Islam is pretty much like it is living here in the West, except for different clothes, different language, different culture. How would you correct this misconception? What was it like living under Islam?
Well, I'll give you the quote from the 20th century number one Islamic philosopher. His name was Sheikh Abu al-A'la al-Mawdudi, okay? And this is how he viewed the Islamic State. He believes that the Islamic State is a totalitarian state, and all Muslims must live under Islamic State. And by the way, that is Sharia also. That is Islam. That's what Muhammad said too. So he agrees that Muslims have to live under Sharia, under Islamic State, and in that state, no one has any privacy. Everything is state-controlled. And in that sense, he said, Islamic State is very similar to communism and fascism. So if Muslim leaders tell us that living under the Islamic State is a kind of living under a totalitarian ideology like fascism and communism, why aren't we taking their word for it?
And what was daily life like for you?
Well, something that I notice now, that when you live in the Middle East, you live controlled by other people constantly. You don't think of being a personal relationship with God. You want to please God. You want to please man. Because if you don't please them, they can kill you. They can destroy you. So, because Allah gave his power to do his bidding to the people, to the Islamic State. So while in the West, we look at government serves the people, In Islam, people serve the government. So the government in Islam assumes the role of God, of Allah. And Allah in Islam should never be criticized. So Islamic government cannot be criticized. The only time an Islamic government will be criticized is if they don't follow Islamic law. So a Muslim government should be completely accepted and respected and never criticized as long as it's ruled by Sharia. That's a very different concept of government from government serves people in the West. How we look at government in the West is totally different. It's a tyranny in Islam. We live to please the government. Well, that's how I felt. I felt that I'm a slave. Under Islam, slavery is highly regulated. Women are oppressed, but not just women are oppressed. Everybody's oppressed. And that's a dirty little secret. Men are told that they have all these privileges. But why does Islam give men all these privileges? Because they want something very important from a man. They want his life. They want him to go kill himself in the jihad against non-Muslims to expand the power of Islamic government. So what does the Islamic government want from its citizens? It wants us to sacrifice ourselves for the expansion of that entity. And that happened to me. I lost my father to the jihad against Israel. And the president of Egypt came to pay condolences to our house, and he told us, we were little kids. I mean, I was 8. My siblings around me were all, you know, some of them were toddlers even. And he asked us, which one of you kids will avenge your father's blood by killing Jews? And that's how we are supposed to view our duty in life. And it made me feel very uncomfortable, even though I couldn't even understand what he was talking about as a child. I couldn't understand, but it made me feel very uncomfortable because it made me feel that if I really love my father, then I must go kill Jews. So everything is sacrificed for the growth of the Islamic government, the growth of the power of the Islamic government. Women and men are totally segregated under Islamic law. And women are oppressed, but they become also oppressors. I have lived and seen women beating their maids horribly. It's a very cruel. So cruelty on women, it gets transferred to women becoming cruel on people under them. So it's like living in a society of slaves and masters. Everybody's a slave and master. And that's how I felt my life was under Islam. And then I come and land in America, and it's a totally different dynamic. In America, I see people respecting people under them just for being human. That is not a concept in Islam.
What is the view of life? You talk about in the West, by and large, over under the influence of biblical values, life is, not without exception, but life is usually viewed as sacred. How is it in the Islamic world?
Actually, death is worship. If you want to express your utmost love for God, you want to go kill his enemies. Allah, the God of Islam, has enemies on earth, human enemies. And they are the majority of the population of the people on earth. They're called non-Muslims. And even among Muslims, Shiites called Sunnis apostates and Sunnis called Shiites apostates. So Allah has a lot of enemies on this earth. And the job of a good Muslim is to go kill them and get killed in the process. And that's the only way to prove your loyalty and love of the God of Islam. In the Bible, Jesus died for us. But in Islam, we must die for Allah. Very, very different concept. Because life is precious in biblical values. In Islam, they don't care. You would see that a mother would stand in front of the cameras in the Muslim world and say, I'm proud to give my kids to the jihad and have them killed in jihad, killing Jews. And these are the women who are respected in the Muslim world. These are actually the women who are given, their pictures are in the newspapers as heroes. So if you want to get good status in the Muslim world, be proud that you have children jihadists.
In that vein, you also note that in a biblical worldview, God is the redeemer of mankind, but you say Allah is the humiliator. Give us an example.
Yes. In the Quran, there are many references by Allah telling Muslims to humiliate people. Humiliate Jews and Christians who live in the Islamic world. Allah has 99 names. One of them is the deceiver. And one of them is the humiliator. And the one who puts people down. So that is a very different concept of Allah, of God, from God the Redeemer. In the Bible, God lifts us up. Wow! I could not believe it when I became a Christian and I moved to America. I couldn't believe that Allah wants to lift me up instead of pushing me down and humiliating me and ordering me to humiliate others. And you know, there's a verse in the Quran that clearly says, make the Jews and Christians pay a penalty tax for being Jews and Christians if they want to live. You want to live, you have to pay a penalty tax called jizya. But in the Quran, they don't only want them to pay the jizya, but they want them to pay the jizya while being humiliated and feel yourselves subdued. So Muslims take pleasure not only in forcing them to pay the jizya, but pay it with humiliation. If you go to the Middle East and see how people treat each other, there's a lot of humiliation and physical abuse of everybody. In the Quran, Allah commands men to beat their wives. There's not one commandment to love or cherish or be loyal to your wife. Not once. Very harsh life to live under Islam.
Noni Darwish is our guest. We're talking about the Islamic worldview versus a Christian worldview. When we come back, we're going to talk about how she was taught to regard Muhammad and to guard his reputation as a Muslim.
In Western societies where the most basic notions of right and wrong are not only denied but actively suppressed, recovering a biblical and distinctly Christian understanding of the natural law is absolutely essential.
Aaron Wolf of Chronicles Magazine talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Traditionally, Christians have understood that man is not born a blank slate just waiting to be programmed like a machine. We are moral creatures whose imaginations are darkened by sin. Yet every person still has a basic understanding of right and wrong, because God has revealed it to us in his creation through natural law. Denying the vital role of natural law has grave consequences, not only for society, but for the church's crucial task of proclaiming the gospel.
You can meet and hear Aaron Wolf making the case for natural law Friday, June 9th and Saturday, June 10th,
at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org.
Epiphany Lutheran Church in Door, Michigan gathers to receive our Lord's gifts in word, baptism, and supper every Sunday morning at 9:15. Bible study at 11. Join us at 4219 Park Lane in Door, or visit us on the web, epiphanydoor.org. Christ-centered, cross-focused, historic, confessional, liturgical. Epiphany Lutheran Church in Door, Michigan. epiphanydoor.org. 616-681-0791.
Law and Gospel, the Reformation Solas, the Theology of the Cross, the Means of Grace, Simultaneously Saint and Sinner. These are some of the topics covered in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Hallmarks of Lutheran Identity. It's written by regular guest Dr. Al Schmidt. Hallmarks of Lutheran Identity is published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or read an excerpt at issuesetc.org. Hallmarks of Lutheran Identity, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The 500th anniversary of the Reformation approaches. A good time to ask, who are we as confessional Lutherans? What's our heritage? The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission has produced the Layman's Guide to Theological History. Go to the clcc.org and see which of these presentations and books would be most helpful to you and your fellow parishioners. And consider becoming a member with us as the CLCC seeks to help more people know what it means to be a confessional Lutheran. TheCLCC.org.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Noni Darwish is our guest. We're talking about the Islamic worldview versus a Christian worldview. She was born and raised in Gaza and Cairo. She's director of Former Muslims United, a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy, and author of several books, including her latest, Wholly Different, Why I Chose Biblical Values Over Islamic Values. Noni, how were you taught to regard Muhammad? I mean, other than simply as the prophet, how are you taught to regard him and to guard his reputation as a Muslim?
Whatever Muhammad did, and Muhammad did kill, Muhammad lied, Muhammad married a girl who was 6, consummated the marriage at 9, he ordered the killing of some poets, Arab poets who wrote poetry ridiculing him or criticizing him. So he ordered killing 9 of them, and one of them was a female woman poet, and they brought her, they brought Muhammad her head while she was breastfeeding her baby. So all these stories are told in Islamic books, books on the life of Muhammad. The Arabic book is called Sirat Rasulullah. They tell you that Muhammad did all that, but they don't say it as a negative. They say it as a story to be proud of, and that he's justified in killing these people. So if you start looking at it negatively, then you are, you've committed a crime against Muhammad, because Muhammad is the perfect man. So the values of whatever your values of right or wrong depends on how Muhammad lived his life. And if he did any kind of sin, he's immune from sin. Muhammad is, under Islamic law, is immune from sin. In the Bible, we're all sinners. In Islam, they are all sinners. Non-Muslims are sinners. In the Bible, we have to confess our sin. In Islam, Muhammad ordered Muslims to conceal their sin, to conceal it. How are we going to have redemption if we conceal our sin? And that's why Muslims are like exploding with guilt. And that's horrible, horrible feeling when I was a Muslim. That's how I felt. I was full of guilt. In the Bible, we're guided by the Holy Spirit. In Islam, we're manipulated by human terror. And that's how we decide our behavior, depending who's there to terrorize us today and who's not. And that's how we determine how we behave today. It's a totally different value system. Who's watching me and who's not watching me? Very important under Islam.
Were you taught at all that there was any mercy in Allah toward the guilty sinner?
No. Yes, there are a couple of times in the Quran that says, God the merciful. But God will not forever forgive his enemies. And if you forgive, and his enemies are Jews and Christians and pagans, and if a Muslim forgives them, he also becomes an enemy of Allah. So how are you going to forgive? If God himself doesn't forgive, and the penalty for criticizing Muhammad is death. And it says clearly that law in the Sharia, if you criticize Muhammad, your penalty is death. And even if you repent, you still have to be killed. So repenting to God, to Allah, is useless because he's not going to forgive you.
Does this explain, Noni, why, and we've seen it many times in the last decades, when there is some kind of what Muslims perceive, either in the Muslim world or in the Western world, as an insult to Allah, a cartoon or someone writes a book, something along those lines?
Exactly.
Is this why we see such violent response, such, in some cases, to the Western eyes, it just looks like an irrational response?
Exactly. And it's how Muhammad behaved, how he set an example of himself, because he did kill anybody who disagreed with him. He killed them. He beheaded the males of a whole Jewish tribe because he didn't want to convert to Islam. So whatever Muhammad does is right. That's it.
What do you make of those in the West who talk about peaceful Islam?
Well, the West is politically correct. I have never heard of a peaceful Islam and a not peaceful Islam in the Middle East. The word moderate Muslims and radical Muslim was coined in the West, not in the Middle East. Never heard of it. This is all phrases. So the West doesn't offend Muslims who are not the ones who are doing the terror themselves. And when I'm speaking about all of that, I'm not speaking about people. But when I speak when I do public speaking, people would tell me, oh, are you trying to say that all Muslims are bad? And I'm saying, I'm not speaking about people. There are good and bad in everybody. But speaking about an ideology that gives you a criteria of what a good person should be. And under Islam, you have to kill and get killed to go to heaven. That's the criteria. If people do it or not do it, that's a different story.
So you're talking there about the worldview and the ideology that is Islam.
Ideology, not the people. Because there's good... I'll tell you what. Under Islam, a man has to can have a right to marry up to 4 wives. In the Muslim marriage contract, a man is not required to be loyal to his wife. That doesn't mean that every Muslim man is disloyal to his wife. But the law states that only the woman has to be loyal to her husband. But a man can have up to 4 wives in addition to slaves, sexual slavers. Saudi Arabia practiced slavery until 1962, when it was so embarrassed by biblical land that here I am calling myself I'm the better religion, and I'm still practicing slavery. And so they officially made slavery illegal in 1962. The same day, riots erupted in Mecca and Medina on how can they eliminate an institution that's allowed under Islam and highly regulated. And they did this in response to the West, because the West made slavery. And it's a biblical value. Making slavery illegal is a biblical value. But under Islam, a man can beat his wife, he can have sexual slaves. Not all Muslim men, of course, do that. There are some Muslim men who are loyal to their wives. But it's not a requirement under Islam, under Islamic law. It's not a requirement. And that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about people. I'm talking about what is the measure, the criteria a religion places on what's good and what's bad for a human being to live under. That's what I'm talking about.
Noni Darwish is our guest. We're talking about the Islamic worldview versus a Christian worldview. On the other side of the break, we will talk about both the idea and the practice of jihad as it really is in Islamic countries.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Dr. Anthony Eslin will be speaking on the topic of imagination and education at the second annual Wittenberg Academy Family Retreat, which will be held at Camp Okoboji in Milford, Iowa on April 27th through the 29th, 2017. Join us and be immersed in God's Word, thoughtful discussions, and family fun. For more information or to register, visit www.wittenbergacademy.org and click on the registration tab.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
For 28 years, I had the privilege of serving as a chaplain in the United States Navy.
Dr. Dan Gard, retired Rear Admiral and President of Concordia University Chicago, on the need for military chaplains.
During that time, I was able to bring word and sacrament to so many young people and their families, our sons and daughters spread throughout the world. Truly a privilege and an honor, and today, there are other chaplains that must follow. We need more LCMS chaplains in all branches of the military. It's an incredible, amazing mission opportunities to go to places no other pastor can go, but to go with the same tools that any other pastor brings wherever he goes, word and sacrament.
You can find out more about the vocation of military chaplain at lcms.org/armed forces. The LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armed forces. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. Noni Darwish is our guest, author of the book Wholly Different, Why I Chose Biblical Values Over Islamic Values. Former Muslim, we're talking with her about the Islamic worldview versus a Christian worldview. A big concept here, and you've mentioned it before, Noni, is that of jihad, both the idea and the practice of it. Some suppose that jihad is simply that inner spiritual struggle that the Muslim is to undergo, and they view this idea of jihad as war, as literal violence, as an aberration only held to by radical Muslims. What is the idea and practice of jihad when you're living under Islam?
Well, I never heard the idea that jihad is anything but a war when I was living in the Middle East. Jihad means to war. That's the definition of jihad. In Muslim books,
to war with non-Muslims to establish the religion. And in Al-Azhar University, it is defined as a permanent war institution against Jews, Christians, and pagans. So that's the definition of jihad from their books. In the Quran, when the word jihad is mentioned, 97% it refers to violence and war. Only 3% it refers to the higher jihad, which is some other form of jihad that they hardly ever talk about. And when after 9/11, I saw a couple of Muslims explaining the meaning of jihad by quoting one very, I've never even heard of it, that, oh, jihad means an inner struggle self-analysis. Never heard that. And they were 3% right. So Muslims are really trained to lie if it's for the benefit of Islam. So lying is an obligation under Islamic law, if it benefits Islam. So Islam justifies lying, slander, and exaggeration in order for it to survive.
When you watch the news and see the activities of groups like ISIS, the Islamic State, and terrorist organizations like them, what is your thought as a former Muslim?
Thank God I'm not there. Because Egypt now, the Sinai Peninsula, is run by ISIS. The Sheikhs of Al-Azhar, the top Islamic university in the world is in Cairo. It's called Al-Azhar University. Okay? And until today, they have never condemned ISIS as un-Islamic. In fact, there's a top sheikh in Saudi Arabia who said that ISIS is exactly what Islam advocates. But Western media doesn't want to get these quotations and tell Americans what is going on. So the problem really is us. Also, that we in the West don't want to take their word for it. Islam is so convoluted and so advocates such opposite values to the West, that the West is baffled. They don't know what to do.
How are women regarded under Islam, and how would you contrast that with how women are regarded under the influence of a biblical worldview in the West?
Well, I have a chapter in my book about feminism, secular feminism, Islamic feminism, and biblical feminism. I believe that the Bible came and gave rights to women that were never equated. I mean, he really... The Bible and Jesus made a man and a woman are supposed to be one flesh, a husband and wife. Which is, in my opinion, that's the ultimate equality. The biblical values towards women have given them such honoring by making marriage one man, one woman. The idea of our marriage as one man and one woman is the most feminist, is the number one feminist movement in the world, in my opinion. That is true equality. But the feminists in America, the secular feminists in America, are throwing the baby with the bathwater. They have no appreciation to what the Bible did to them, and they are throwing it away. Because in Islam, a marriage is not one man, one woman. It's one man and a harem. That's how women are regarded, as a harem. The richer you are, the more women you can have. That's it. That's how women... Men and women are not one flesh under Islamic values. In fact, there is nothing even called community property in a marriage in Islam. A woman doesn't inherit from her husband except very little after he dies. And if he's married to four women, it has to be divided between all the women and the children. And the male children get double the females, mothers and sisters and everything. So really, it's a very isolated feeling to be a woman in Islam. The woman in Islam is sacrificed, totally sacrificed. But again, also the men are sacrificed, and the children. The whole family is sacrificed so men can go to war to kill the enemies of Allah in order for Islam to expand. The goal of Islam is to expand the Islamic State at the expense of family happiness, whether it's men, women, or children. So another value in the West that is very different from Islamic values is in the West we say God, family, country. In Islam, it's Allah, Jihad, the Islamic State, and that's everybody has to be sacrificed for Jihad to accomplish the Islamic State and expand it. Women are sacrificed, and it's very obvious, but men are also. They are smothered with all these rights in order for them to go kill themselves and kill the Jews and Christians with them.
You write in your book that Allah is in competition with women for the heart and mind of man, and under Islamic law, the woman is always the loser. With about 30 seconds, what do you mean by that, Noni?
Well, Allah wants one thing from men, to go fight against his enemies on earth and expand the Islamic State. And for that purpose, you see in the Quran, if you read the Quran, God is telling men, I'll give you this if you do that. I'll give you this. I'll send you to heaven if you just go kill my enemies. You can even beat your wife. You can have up to four wives. You can have sex with slave girls. And even when you die, I'll give you 72 virgins when you go to heaven. So The Allah of Islam is trying to make the men do his bidding on earth to create his kingdom on earth, which is called the caliphate. Who's the obstacle here for men who want to go give their lives to their Allah? It's the women. So Allah wants to put down the women. He wants to put them down. He wants the role to be only to give birth to the future jihadists. So as a Muslim woman, you're really almost in competition with Allah over the heart of the men. And Allah, of course, always wins. Because Allah is the one who's going to send them to the heaven for the 72 virgins. Allah also compares, there's a hadith in which Allah says, when you go to heaven, you're going to have huris who are much more beautiful than earthly women. And your wife, leave those women there behind. You're going to have a lot better. But just go and kill the Jews and Christians and pagans, and I'll take you to that heaven. So you kind of feel your competition with Allah when you're a Muslim woman. That's how I felt.
How are you regarded by fellow Muslims as a former Muslim?
I should be killed. Here I am living in America. America is bringing in thousands and millions of refugees from countries that if I land in any of these countries, I will be killed after I land, by anybody on the street. So they are bringing the people here. People who are telling you, we want to live under Sharia law. America is having a big gamble here. Huge gamble.
Noni Darwish was born and raised in Gaza and Cairo. She's director of Former Muslims United, senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy. She's author of several books, including her latest, Wholly Different, Why I Chose Biblical Values Over Islamic Values. When you purchase this book using the Amazon link at our website, a percentage of your purchase will help the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Listen on Demand, and look for Wholly Different by Noni Darwish. Noni, thank you.
Thank you, Todd. My pleasure.
In Hour 2 of Issues, etc., Mark Hemingway joins us. We'll talk about a liberal columnist connecting religious decline and Trump's election. Dr. Paul Meyer will also join us to talk about the completed renovation of a shrine in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And we'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson on the Lord's Supper with Pastor Tom Baker. Hour 2 of Issues, etc. in 5 minutes.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, etc. Issues, etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
At Concordia University Irvine, you can pursue advanced theological study for academic, professional, or personal development. Concordia's Master of Arts in Theology program is grounded in the truth of Scripture and insights from the Lutheran Confessions. Courses are taught online and at intensive on-campus sessions in the summer. Apologetics, Christian education leadership, and Reformation studies are just a few of the emphases offered. For more information, visit cui.edu/theology.
Hi, this is Pastor Clayton from Zion Lutheran Church of Muscoota, Illinois, a proud supporter of Issues, etc. Zion is a congregation firmly grounded in God's grace given in the Word and Sacraments, where we treasure the timeless beauty of the liturgy. Zion is also a vibrant, young, family-friendly congregation where you would be warmly welcomed. Zion is located at 101 South Railway Street in Muscoota, Illinois, and we would love to share God's gifts of grace with you. For more information, please visit our website at zionmuscoota.com.